History at Hand, revision at your fingertips. How did the Cold War develop in the period 1945 to 1949? Within this podcast, we'll be looking at the reasons for the rivalry between the Soviet Union and the United States of America in the immediate aftermath of the Second World War. We'll follow that by having a look at how each side antagonized each other, leading to the significant souring of relationships, if not the outright hostility, which is called the Cold War. One of the fundamental differences between the United States and the Soviet Union were their systems of government. Both believed that they had the right way forward. Both believed that the other was intent on destroying their way of life. In the West, there was democratic capitalism. Here you had the free market economy, you had quite great extremes of rich and poor, but wealth was generally created at a much higher level. We also see there is freedom, freedom of speech, freedom of information, freedom of worship. All these things were enshrined within a democratic system. Open, multi-party elections were a key feature of the democratic capitalist state, which Britain, America, etc. were. The Soviet system was based upon the principles of Karl Marx, communism. Following the Russian Revolution led by Lenin in 1917, Russia had been established as a socialist republic. In 1923 it called itself the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. By the 1930s, Stalin had emerged as its leader, a totalitarian dictator who established a system of state planning and state regulation which created a much more effective and successful economy within Russia, but at the expense of personal liberty and freedom. This form of communism did not allow for debate and discussion. The communist way was the way Stalin wanted it to be, and any dissent from that would see people sent to the Gulag, the Russian system of concentration camps. Standards of living were still much lower than in the West, but there was much greater equality between the levels of income each person received. The first clashes between communism and the rest of the world happened very soon after the Russian Revolution. In 1918, troops were sent from America, Britain, France and Japan to support the whites, that was the monarchists, against the Red Revolutionaries within Russia. This left a bitter taste which was not forgotten. Both sides did fight together in the Second World War against Nazi Germany, but they disagreed about how the war should be conducted. The Russians complained that the Americans were too slow in opening up a second front, which would alleviate the pressure that their troops were facing in the East. Although both countries became involved in the war in 1941, it wasn't until 1944 that D-Day actually took place. Up to this point, the brunt of the fighting was all endured by the Soviet Union. They endured during the war over 20 million deaths. More Russians died in their assault on Berlin in April 1945 than Americans died in the entire Second World War. In spite of being allies, Russia strongly believed that their sacrifice gave them a more important position at the negotiating table once war was over. Events in 1945, at the end of World War II, made the conflict between the Americans and the Russians much more palpable. Two conferences were held, one at Yalta and one at Potsdam. These conferences, although on the surface seemed to be going well, were riddled by behind-the-scenes backbiting and concerns about position and status after the war. At Yalta in February 1945, the big three who met were Stalin, the leader of Russia, Roosevelt, the American president, and Winston Churchill, the British Prime Minister. Here they agreed that free elections should be held in all the liberated countries of Europe. They also agreed to divide Germany into four zones, one controlled by each of France, Britain, America and the Soviet Union. Berlin itself would be divided into four sectors, although it was well within the Soviet zone. The big three were keen to negotiate spheres of influence for the post-war world. Russia was determined that she should have a buffer zone of friendly states which would prevent future aggression from the West. The biggest concerns at Yalta were over the status of Poland and what government it should have. There were competing London and Lublin Poles representing Western and communist ways of government. There was also disputes over what Poland's borders should be, as the Russians wanted them shifted westwards at the expense of Germany. Russia got their way. On the surface, the meeting at Potsdam in July 1945 was much more acrimonious than that at Yalta. The war in Europe was now over. Germany had been defeated. Hitler was dead. Out of the big three from Yalta, only Stalin was left. Roosevelt had died in April to be replaced by Harry S. Truman. In Britain, an election had elected a Labour government for the first time. Clement Attlee replaced Winston Churchill. Most of the agreements made at Yalta were reinforced, though things like free elections in liberated countries were still kept very vague. Truman and Stalin did not get on. This was made worse by the fact that the Americans had a very big secret. They'd been testing the nuclear bomb in the New Mexico desert. Although Soviet spies knew about it, the Americans hadn't come clean to their allies. The situation after Potsdam was tense, and it was going to get tenser. The Americans dropped their A-bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki in order to bring the war in the east to an end very quickly, before the Soviets could get a foothold in that region. The Soviets kept their troops, 6 million of them, in Eastern Europe. Different attitudes towards the treatment of Germany also soon started to emerge. The Western powers were keen to see some reconstruction. For the Russians, they wanted to keep Germany as weak as possible. At this stage, neither country fully trusted the other, but still, there was no outright hostility between them. It was Stalin's policies in Eastern Europe, though, which aroused the first major concerns to hit the public. In March 1946, Winston Churchill, the ex-Prime Minister, made a speech in front of the American President in Fulton, Missouri. Here he claimed an Iron Curtain had descended across the continent of Europe. He was essentially saying that the Soviets had created their own empire behind this Iron Curtain, and that the West should do something about it. By the use of the Red Army and the intimidation of other political parties, politicians trained up in Moscow were able to lever their way into power in countries like Poland, Hungary, Romania, Bulgaria. The free elections promised by Yalta did not come to pass, and these countries had governments very loyal to Stalin. By the end of 1946, it was clear that Europe was divided by this Iron Curtain. As Churchill said, a shadow had descended, and all the great joy of victory in 1945 had now been dissipated. The fear for the United States was that communism would continue to expand westwards. America's natural instinct at the end of the war was to isolate itself off again, to get its troops home, and to let Europe sort its own problems out. But the new communist menace meant that that could not happen. Particularly persuaded by the British, the Americans were forced to keep their hand in Europe. By 1947, the Americans had devised a policy of containment. This meant that America will prevent any future communist expansion. It sought to do this by the carrot, that is aid, and the stick, potential aggression. In 1947, the British were fighting a losing battle in Greece against communist insurgents. The Americans needed to come in and bail them out. In a speech in March 1947, President Truman established what became known as the Truman Doctrine. That is, that America would send military aid to help any country under threat from communist aggression. America backed up these words with sending military aid to the tune of $400 million to Greece and to Turkey in order to prevent them becoming communist. America would pursue this policy elsewhere throughout the world. Resisting aggression wasn't the only method the Americans wanted to use. Europe was in ruins as a result of the war, which had lasted 6 years. Countries were starving, homes had to be rebuilt, infrastructures reconstructed, people to be found employment, farms to be re-established, factories to be set up, and all of this, of course, needed a great deal of money. If Europe didn't recover, then Europe would be ripe for communist takeover, particularly countries like Italy and France, where a strong communist presence was already being felt. The Marshall Plan proposed giving $15 billion worth of aid to Western Europe in order to ensure that the economies would recover and that the lure of communism was dissipated. To start with, American Congress was a bit reluctant to spend such vast sums of money. But when Czechoslovakia fell to communism in late 1947, Congress changed their minds and were quick to rush through this aid package. Over the next few years, Marshall Aid was able to make the economies of Europe recover. Unrest and communist agitation went down. It was a clear success for the United States. Stalin criticized it as American imperialism. He was also deeply resentful of the sheer wealth America possessed in comparison to the Soviet Union. He refused to let any of the countries of Eastern Europe sign up to this martial aid. Instead, he established the Communist Information Bureau, Cominform, and Comecon. These organizations were to integrate the economies of Eastern Europe and make them even more reliant on the Soviet Union. From 1945 to 1947, both superpowers, America and Russia, consolidated their own spheres of influence and made them very loyal to themselves. But in 1948, where the two met in Germany, it almost led to the Cold War turning hot. The division of Germany into four zones in 1945 had essentially been dividing Germany into two zones, a Soviet zone and a Western zone. The West were fearful that if Germany remained weak, then the whole area would be taken over by the communists. The Soviets were fearful that if Germany had renewed strength, then once again Germany might threaten the Soviet Union. The West went about consolidating their zones, uniting them first as a bizonia, then as a trizonia, introducing a currency which would be applicable in all of them. The communists looked upon this with suspicion. It was a betrayal of what was agreed at Yalta and Potsdam. Joint decision-making about Germany broke down. Stalin could really do very little about what the West were planning for Germany in their zones. But they could do something about Berlin. Berlin, remember, had been divided into four sectors, each under the control of the powers, but it lay deep within Soviet territory. When the West proposed to spread their new currency, the Deutschmark, into the western zones of Berlin, Stalin recoiled, and on the 24th of June, 1948, he blocked off road, rail, and canal access to the city. The 2.5 million inhabitants of West Berlin were cut off from aid. They only had 6 weeks' supply of food and fuel to keep them. Truman was faced with a problem. He could either give up Berlin, but that would be against his policy of containment and send the wrong message to the rest of the world. He could try and force through the blockade, but that could be seen as an act of war and lead to renewed conflict. Or, on British advice, he could undertake an airlift, that is, the use of civilian and military planes for the shipping of supplies into West Berlin. Luckily, it was agreed at Yalta and Potsdam that three airports and three air corridors were available for the Western powers to fly into Berlin. If the Soviets shot down the American planes bringing aid, then that would be seen as an act of war and they would be the aggressors. With the almost universal blessing of the West Berlin population, the airlift was carried out. 4,000 tons a day were needed in order to supply the Berliners with enough food and fuel to actually survive. Berliners had to endure food rationing and shortages and power cuts, but they were willing to see it through. The airlift started slowly, but as the logistical operation was improved, then by the winter, over 8,000 tons a day were being brought in, and by the spring of 1949, 13,000 tons a day could be delivered. That's one plane every 3 minutes. The Berliners were helped by a mild winter, and by the fact that the Americans were determined to maintain the airlift in spite of Soviet complaints and pestering. The Americans even brought their bombers capable of carrying the A-bomb to Britain, in range of Moscow, in order to show Stalin that they meant business. In May 1949, it was clear that Stalin had failed to actually force the West out of Berlin, and he called off the blockade. It was a clear propaganda victory for the Americans. In the aftermath of the blockade and airlift, Germany was more formally divided into two. In the West, a Federal Republic of Germany was created. In the East, a German Democratic Republic. They would not be reunited again until 1990. West Berlin maintained its independent status within East Germany. It became a beacon of capitalism and freedom within a communist repressive sea. America formalized further her commitment to Western Europe with the creation of NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. This military alliance was the key tool to prevent communist expansion in Europe. As we see, the Cold War had escalated by 1949 to a point of confrontation. Luckily, it wasn't to a point of war. You have to judge whether you think it is the Americans or the Soviets who are most responsible for creating this Cold War. Was it down to the Americans, their A-bomb? Or was it down to the Soviets and their expansion into Eastern Europe, their repression of the peoples who they controlled? Were American actions merely responses to Soviet aggression, or were they an overreaction which escalated what was tension into potential conflict? As always, you have to decide for yourself, but base it upon the evidence. Goodbye, and good luck.